Tuesday. Welcome to Tuesday.
Can you do me a favor? Do you do the opening part of the show by yourself? I'm finishing up a text.
Sure.
Dear Manny Machado, you are stupid. Your friend Bill.
I don't even care anymore. We don't need him. It would have been nice if we had him.
Problem was, he was a carrot that was dangled in front of our baseball fan hands for so long. And some days it looked like we would get him, and other days it didn't look like we would get him. But we all, you know, we all want to believe. That's all we have in our hearts is belief.
Don't stop
we
believing.
Just want to keep believing. That's what the White Sox, that was their theme, don't stop believing. So we heard those words, and we continued to believe, and then Manny Machado went to San Diego.
Well, given the
that hellhole. Did you ever go to San Diego? Ah,
yes.
Who'd want to go there for $300 million? So let's review. He got $300 million, and he gets to live and play baseball in San Diego. What was he thinking?
He's not on vacation. I mean, he's working.
He's working. Right. But still, San Diego. So pleasant. So pleasant.
I don't know if I've ever been there now that I said that.
Oh, you gotta go.
What's near Petaluma?
I don't know. Petaluma?
Mm-hmm.
You went to Petaluma, but you've never been to San Diego?
We went to Wine Country. Not the big one.
So that would be close to Napa, probably.
Napa or Sonoma. I think we went to Sonoma.
Yeah. Oh, very nice. Both very nice.
Is that near San Diego?
Mm-mm.
I've never been to San Diego,
Mm-mm.
then.
Mm-mm.
I've never been.
San Diego's just... It's as close to perfect as perfect can be.
Year-round?
It's always nice. It's all Yeah, it's always like 78 degrees. It rains like three times a year. It's just perfect there.
Why aren't we living there? Why aren't we doing the show from there?
I don't think our brand of radio would work there. Because we've got flaws, and they're against them. They just want things to be perfect.
We have flaws, and we don't have plastic in our bodies.
That's the thing.
Although it's not like that there, is it?
Everybody's very attractive there.
And are there real housewives?
It's wrong to say everybody. Like 99% of the people are very, very attractive there.
So we
there's
right
one
in?
Guy that's kind of ugly. Ray. That's his name. They all know him. On yesterday's show, we started talking about this list that was compiled by the people over at newarena.com. It has the 30 best stand-up comics of all time. Now, right out of the box, you and I found fault with the fact that they had Amy Schumer at number 30 and Kevin Hart at number 29. And then there were a couple that were also debatable. Aziz Ansari, whose work I enjoy immensely, but he's not the 28th best stand-up of all time.
He's pretty good.
Margaret Cho, who's good, but not the 27th best stand-up of all time.
And she was better.
She used to be better.
Like when she just came out of when I just first saw her stand-up. I was like, wow, this is different. She's
so original.
Funny. Yeah.
Right.
And then now I would have you done
much
for me lately.
I get that. I understand that. We left off. We did number 18, which was Bob Hope. And at first you go, Bob
How about
Hope?
That?
How about that? Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you.
But believe me when I tell you that there was a time where Bob Hope was the most cutting edge, fastest paced comic in America. It's hard to imagine because we all know about his specials later on at Christmas. You know, when he'd have Brooke Shields and Martha Raye on, and you would just stare at the TV and go, what? Why is this on?
And then Martha Raye would say, what does she have that I haven't?
Yes. Yes.
She was nuts.
Yeah. Crazy Martha Raye. You said, this is the one we left off on, number 17 was Rodney Dangerfield. You said didn't do that much for you. You're okay with him?
You know what?
Not great. Remember what his doctor's name was?
I got a duck. I can't remember.
Dr. Benny Boombatz. That was his name. Dr. Benny Boombatz.
He was funny, but he was a one-trick pony.
He didn't get any respect, Wendy, from you. You were the reason he became famous, to get your respect,
uh-huh.
and you just refused
I'm
it.
I'm sure that's it.
I don't know that you'll know who number 16 is.
Oh, I like the challenge.
Bill Burr.
I know who Bill Burr is.
Do you know who he
yes.
is? Yeah, what do you think of him?
I think he's... I didn't know who he was, so I looked him up. Pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. He is very funny. Very opinionated. And you should, if you're doing stand-up, that's part of it. You should be, right?
I don't know. There are so many, as you know, there are just so many different types of comics. And
yeah.
I like the opinionated ones, but I also like comics that talk about things that I can relate to as well, like just your average person.
All right, it's funny you say that, because here's my thing with Bill Burr. Before I did stand-up comedy, when I would go to clubs and watch it, there were guys that the guys and the girls I liked the most were the ones that I said, I bet it'd be fun to hang out with that guy, not just watch him on stage. I bet that girl would be fun to talk to, like just see somewhere and sit down and have a chat with them. I bet that those were the ones that I, and Bill Burr, I can guarantee you it would not be a long conversation between he and I.
It's just a lot of vitriol in his act.
There's some bitterness and anger.
He's pretty funny, though.
He makes it work.
Yeah.
Right. I give him credit. Yeah, I do. I really...
I don't think top
30. He, oh, he's not the 16th best stand-up comic of all time.
Oh, for sure not.
There's no way. You can swear.
Uh-uh.
Go ahead. But he's very funny. He owns what he does. Like, he's not kidding. Whatever he's telling you.
Even though he's a comic, he's not kidding.
He's not happy. Right?
He is pretty funny, though, but very intense.
You know who I told that to once? I called them out, and I said, do you know who Dave Attell is?
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed Dave Attell at another station, and he's sitting next to me, and I said, you don't seem happy. And he goes, I am very happy. And I go, you don't seem happy at all. And he goes, I'm one of the happiest people I know, but there's no way he's happy. If you've ever seen him talk about anything, it's... his disdain for it and his hatred of it and stuff like that. And I go, I don't say that in a bad way. I think you've made a career out of not being happy.
Yes.
Stop saying that. I'm very happy. But I don't think he's so happy.
No.
Number 15 should almost be in a category all by himself. That would be Andy Kaufman.
I just watched that Jim Carrey portrayal.
Man on the Moon.
I truly enjoyed that movie so much.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good.
It was really interesting.
But what about him as a stand-up? What did you think of Andy Kaufman as a stand-up?
I got to be honest with you, and this is what brought it back, because Jim Carrey did a great job portraying him. Did you think so?
I thought he did, yeah.
And I just remember seeing him on Saturday Night Live. And was there also a documentary about Andy Kaufman in addition to
the Jim Carrey documentary about the making of the movie? I saw both of them. Yeah.
And I was watching it with my son, Michael, who really didn't know much about him. And what I said is, when he came on Saturday Night Live the first time, and he had his little record player, and he was doing Here I Come to Save the Day in Oklahoma, I said, I didn't know how to react.
Right.
It was funny because it was different.
Right.
But it was just so out there. And then the more I saw him, the more I liked him. And I really just got irritated with the whole wrestling thing.
I almost wish that chapter of his life never took place. Yeah.
I know it was like a bit.
It was. But
which you didn't know at the time, him and Roddy Piper, and it's just...
I know.
Fred
Blassie, right?
Who's that?
Fred Blassie was the wrestler. He would fight him. There were a couple guys. Jerry Lawler was the one.
Oh, Jerry Lawler's the one I'm thinking about.
Lawler was the one who on Letterman they had a fight, but it was all staged.
But it didn't look staged, and I was watching that Letterman as it happened.
Yeah.
And I was like appalled. I was shocked and appalled.
Right.
And honestly, Bill, until I saw that movie, I kind of didn't really get the whole gist of it being a hoax.
Right.
I really didn't.
But that's...
It was announced.
That
we knew
was
that.
His goal was
know,
for people to not know if it was real or not real. The highest credit I give him was that he just wanted to get some emotion out of the audience. He wanted to keep people guessing and not know what was ever going to come next. And he did achieve that. You never knew what you were going to get with him. But there was so many staged things going on. The fight he had on the television show Fridays, you know, with the cast where he varied off the script.
Yeah.
I think, and they do that in the movie, don't they?
They
show that in the movie. But there was an episode, for people who don't know, Fridays was ABC's version of Saturday Night Live. They had him on, and right in the middle of a scene, he broke character and kind of varied off the script. And then everybody was getting mad at him, and the producer, Jack Burns, was threatening him, and they were fighting, and the cast didn't know what was going on. It was all staged. The fight on Letterman was all staged. But again, if his goal was to make people not know what was real and what wasn't real,
he achieved that,
you know? Right up to, this is, everyone knows this, when he died, everybody went, well, he's faking it. It's all a bit. for years and years and years and years, he was going to come back at some point.
And we talked to Bob Zmuda about this because I didn't realize that the whole, what was his alter ego? I can't think of his name. I can't think of his name right now, and I'm just, all right. Well, Bob Zmuda, Clifton.
Jerry Clifton or Tony Clifton?
Tony Clifton. You know, that they kind of took turns doing it, like you didn't know. And I didn't realize that Bob Zmuda was so involved
in
Andy's life like that. Yeah. I loved Andy Kaufman, but that wrestling thing took me down a different route.
Yeah, I know.
I was ashamed of him. Does that sound bad? That sounds something like a parent would say.
Well, because you wanted more from him because he was such a comedy genius. Don't do this, or if you're going to do it quick and find something else to do. And the wrestling thing lasted a very long time. Yeah. The first few times I saw him were on Saturday Night Live and on Letterman, and then he became a regular on a show called Van Dyke and Company.
I never watched that.
It was a variety show that Dick Van Dyke hosted, and he was on it every week. And I liked him so much that I would audio tape his performances and then listen to him again and again and again, just because he was so different, you know?
He really, when Michael was watching it with me, Michael's 19, and he was so inspired by Andy because it was like, you know, always kind of keep experimenting. It's like, you know, try something. It doesn't matter how it's going to work out. Just do something different. And that really kind of inspired Michael a little bit.
One of the strangest things, and I don't, again, this may have been in the movie or may not have been, but I know it was in his real life. He did a special where, you know how on a talk show, they always have the desk a little bit higher than the guests to give the host. It's like a staple of, it's a subliminal thing. So when you're watching it at home, that's the big voice. The voice of reason is the host. And then they scale down the chairs just a little bit so that the host is a little bit higher up.
I've been duped
every
all these
show
years.
Does that. It's the craziest thing. So he recognized this. So when he did his special during the talk show segments, he was in a giant desk that was like 10 feet up. And then the guest was regular, and they didn't really call attention to it.
It's so even funnier. I don't think they'd covered that.
Yeah, he was always doing that kind of thing. And then he had a fight with, I can't remember what the show was on PBS where he hosted this thing. So when they gave him this thing, it was a one-time thing, a special. They said, you can interview people that you enjoy. It's up to you. So one of his guests was Howdy Doody. And they go, well, Andy, you know that Howdy Doody, it's just a puppet. And he just went, yeah, but I love Howdy Doody. So he did an interview with Howdy Doody.
I think they showed that.
And they were like, what are you doing? You don't need to talk to Howdy Doody. But yes, he did.
Always, you know, keep surprising people.
So, I know.
And I loved him. And even that wrestling thing could have been like, oh, that crazy Andy. But you're right. It went on
for years
and through various incarnations, like at wrestling matches, then on Letterman. There were like many stages of it where just ended. And he died very soon thereafter, didn't he?
Yeah, pretty soon.
Which
thereafter.
Sucks. We got like the worst part of him right before he died.
That's, I think, probably the only blemish on his
career. It was
career.
A big blemish,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, it's a huge one.
And the last taste in your mouth. You know what I mean? Like, if he did that before, you'd be like, he was stupid. But, you know, look, I mean, just his gentle, creative self, it was such a stretch to have him go the other way.
I
just was like, he's snapped.
I wonder if he would, like, let's say that he was still alive and looking back at his career, I wonder if he would be proud of that era or if he would go, yeah, I missed the boat on that one.
I don't know. Someone like that is determined to do what they want to do, how they want to do it. I don't feel like he'd have regrets.
Maybe
he'd be
not.
Like, yeah, I did it. It was
tried
a phase.
It,
yeah.
Did it? Yeah.
Moved
right.
on.
Right. But I wonder, there's several people who left us way too early, and I can't help but wonder what John Belushi would still be doing, what Freddie Prinze would still be doing.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of people in that bracket where you go, because they left too soon, there's no way of telling where they would have ended up. Like, Belushi, toward the end, was experimenting more with, like, dramatic roles every once in a while, or even romantic leads and stuff. So would that have continued?
I don't know. You know? Because obviously, you know, depression had to get involved in at least Freddie Prinze and stuff. So then you wonder, would they have abused different substances where they never would have been successful again?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep. Maybe.
Chris Farley's in that boat,
too. Oh, without a doubt.
Because he wasn't finished. We had more laughing to do at him.
No question.
He was like, I would look at Chris Farley and just laugh like I do now with Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
I just look at him and he doesn't even have to do anything.
I know. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get some news in and then we will finish up this list of what they say. I'm going to try to. I don't think we've ever done anything that's gone 3 days.
So that's all right.
I'm going to try my best.
It's the stream, Bill.
It is
we
the
can
stream.
Do whatever we want.
Yeah, no rules. It's like the Outback Steakhouse, Wendy.
What's on the Barbie?
I'm having a Bloomin' Onion right now.
Oh, good. You're lucky. Will you share?
No, it's just for me.
All right. Well, we're going through the top 30?
Top 30 comics of all time, according to newarena.com. And they would know, right?
Yeah. This all sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Man.
Thanks, Ryan. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. For the past 3 weeks, we've been reading this list to you.
No, it's been 2 days.
2 days. NewArena.com has put together a list of the greatest stand-up comedians of all time, the top 30. Some we agree with, some we do not. See what you think. Number 14, Wendy, you already know my stance on this gentleman, the late, great Don Rickles, number 14.
He told a joke every now and again.
Every now and then he would pull out a little funny story.
Don Rickles was great. And
no question
still,
about it.
You asked, was it Kathleen Madigan we talked to earlier today? You asked her if it's tough to be a comic, to be politically, in this time of being politically correct.
Mm-hmm.
Don Rickles didn't change at all.
No.
All the way up to the end, correct?
Right up to the end. As you know, I was fortunate enough to see him a couple of years ago in Milwaukee. A contingency of us from Chicago, huge fans of his, went down and saw, or
you
went up
him.
And saw him. I did. I gave him a big hug.
Did you cry?
And he said, remember what he said to me? I said, is it okay if I hug you? I said, because I always said if I ever got to meet you, and the whole time I'm talking, he's just nodding and nodding. I said, if I ever got to meet Don Rickles, I would hug you. Is that okay with you? And he goes, you can hug me, but no tongues.
Oh, that's...
oh my God. It was such a magical evening to meet Don Rickles, one of my all-time heroes. But I have to say this, and everybody who was there felt the same way. As you were laughing at the magic of Don Rickles, you knew it was wrong because it was all wrong because he was making fun of every race, every religion, every color, every creed, you name it. He was ripping on it. But that was the game. That was the Don Rickles game.
Sure.
I'm going to make fun of everybody regardless of everything. And then at the end of every show, and it always used to bother me that he did this, but I kind of get it. He would say, just so you all know, we just came here to have a good time. I don't hold any ill will against anybody of any color, race, creed, color, religion, you name it. He goes, we're all the same inside. And I like at first, I'm like, don't throw in the disclaimer. But
sure. That
was his way of saying, this is just for fun. No, I'm not hurting
Keep
anybody.
The lawyers away.
Yeah, right. Right.
But that was a tight... Wasn't that the era of insult comedy? I mean, wasn't it very popular? You'd take someone and you'd make fun of them for how they looked, what they were.
Oh, yeah. But he was just the master at it.
Which, when you think about it, is not like a great title.
Yeah, I mean, do you think he could? Do you think he could take it? Like if people ripped him like that, I mean,
no one stood a chance. He was too good.
He was too sharp and too strong.
You couldn't duel with him. He was just too good at it.
But he wouldn't take offense if someone did.
No, because if you watch those roasts, they do rip on him, and he loved it.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely loved it. Yeah, I can't say enough good things about Don Rickles. I miss him so much. Number 13, Bill Hicks.
I knew Bill Hicks from Kevin Matthews. That's how I was introduced to him.
He was a guest on the show a few times?
Many times.
Yeah.
And he died pretty young, didn't he?
Yeah, he was in his late 30s.
He, again, was one of those Bill Burr kind of dark, very similar to me.
Very similar. 33, by the way, when he died.
He was pretty funny.
He was so funny.
But it was a dark funny.
Oh, yeah. So incredibly dark. There was a week when I was doing stand-up, there were two clubs that were very close to each other. The Chicago Improv, was in the River North area, and then a half a block away was the Funny Firm. They had a very friendly coexistence. If a show was sold out at one, they would send people over to the other club.
And different owners and everything?
Oh, yeah, different
That's
owners.
That's pretty cool.
But owners that respected each other and knew it was good for business to have a healthy rivalry. So I was working at the Improv, and he was working at the Funny Firm. And I went out of my way every night that week, but once. There was one night I couldn't do it. The schedules didn't allow it. I'd go over and watch his set at the other club, and he did different material. There was some stuff that kind of went through the process from night to night, but for the most part, most of his 45 minutes was different every night.
Really?
It was all good. There wasn't anything in there that I'd go, hey, you could tighten that up, you could change that. It was just his pacing was great. He was so dark and conflicted and, you know,
funny.
One of those, oh, he's just so funny. It's just so funny. He did this one thing once. Now, keep in mind, at the time, he was probably 30. So he was talking about getting older and what worries you when you're getting older. And he goes, I'll be honest with you. The thing that worries me the most is I have a large porn collection, and my mom is going to have to clean out my stuff, and she's going to see what I'm into, and nothing worries me more than that. And he talked about what he's gotten.
That's so funny.
And it was so dark and weird.
And funny.
But God, was it funny.
Oh, yeah, he man. Really was. Bill Hicks. There's some stuff that you can look up and find him on YouTube
Without
and stuff,
a doubt.
Right?
Yeah.
Poor guy.
He handled hecklers so well. There were some people that didn't enjoy him, and he made that part of the show, and he's just so good. Number 12, a guy named Robin Williams. Perhaps the name means something to you, Robin Williams.
I liked his serious stuff. He was too all over the place for me.
He was, but...
He was a whirling dervish.
Yes. But you had to marvel at the energy. There was so... And there are guys that I don't like because they're all energy. Like, Dane Cook is all energy, no comedy. It's just... It's just movement, you know? But Robin Williams married the two perfectly, you know? It was comedy and movement. And, boy, when he was on a roll. I didn't see anybody ever do the go out into the audience and make comedy, instead of two-dimensional, three-dimensional. You know, there were specials of his where he just took to the crowd and just did stuff in the audience. And, wow.
I respect everything he did, but I don't know that was 100% my style.
No,
I guess I'll say.
Yeah.
I just, the way it ended is just awful, isn't it?
Horrible.
I mean, it's like, that's
horrible.
Not the way you wanted the story to be at all. You know, if there was a story, you didn't want it to be like that. You didn't want that to be the last chapter.
That's true. And if we're talking about the negatives, he was one of the biggest, he's notorious for thievery. I mean, he was stealing bits left and right.
And you hate that in a person.
Can't stand it.
I can't believe you still, like, sort of defend Robin Williams.
I'm very conflicted when it comes to that.
Because you, really, anyone who's stolen anything, they're dead to you. Like, Manny Machado stole our hearts for a minute.
Dead to me.
But I find it weird that, you know, you say that about Robin Williams, but you don't have this hatred for him like you do anyone else that would have stolen something.
I know so many guys that he ripped stuff off of, and the story is all the same. They'd be in a club, you'd hear he was around, and then all of a sudden he was on the Tonight Show doing the thing you just did, and it was always the same. If you called him out on it, he'd apologize. He'd take out his checkbook, he'd write you a check for $1,000, and he'd say, will this make things right? Is this
really
good?
But that evidently it made it right with you, that he is aware of it and paid people for it. There are other people that have stolen that say, no, I didn't.
Right.
Amy Schumer, we started talking about this yesterday. A lot of comics accused her of stealing stuff, and she denied.
Right.
I mean, there are sometimes, there was something, oh God, what was it, Bill? I think it was on SNL that I could have sworn it's something you said during the week or we had said, and then it was on SNL. It happens a lot. And, you know, some of the people live in Chicago that write for them, and you wonder, did they steal it? Sometimes funny people come up with the same things.
Yeah.
And sometimes they steal.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you have to, in the comedy world, do you have to be the vessel as well as the writer? I mean, is that looked upon? If you are the big time comedian and you're, I mean, do you have people pumping some jokes into you? I mean, is that...
There's this thing, like, all right, I had a bunch of friends that were stand-up comics, so every once in a while, Vince Maranto was notorious for this. Vince was a guy, a really good guy and a very funny stand-up comic. So he'd say, hey, you know the thing you do about the guy who goes into the bleachers and he can't find a seat? He goes, maybe try this. Think about, instead of the end, him saying this instead of this. And then...
Would you say, shut up, Vince?
Yeah, shut up, Vince. That was always...
But it was a collaboration from that perspective, not just your...
Yeah, that's a tricky one, because I would always give credit, you know, but you're not on stage at the end of a laugh going, that was Vince Maranto's joke.
Right,
How about a hand for Vince Maranto? So...
I mean, we know in the musical world, right? I mean, all of these pop stars, they are essentially vessels for some writer in Nashville or in Los Angeles. You know, Ariana Grande's out there. You'd
not
like to think that she's the one who's doing it. And I think to some extent, Taylor Swift, doesn't she write her own music?
She writes her own music.
But I mean, when she doesn't, is that frowned upon? I mean, does she lose credibility?
Care.
How does that work with the credibility in comedians?
With a bunch of stand-up comics, there are guys that write, they will only do their own stuff. Mm-hmm. No one's writing for me. I'm doing my own stuff. Then there's other guys. We mentioned Bob Hope yesterday. I don't think Bob Hope ever wrote a joke, ever. It's hard to believe because you saw him deliver 10,000 jokes, but he had the best writers in show business constantly writing every day, every night, writing jokes for him.
Mm-hmm.
So... You know, it depends.
I would assume a style, like if you like to do a certain style, or you're known as a certain style, but you got some funny stuff that's maybe not your style. Could you push it to someone and say, hey, this might be more.
This is
more
a good joke for you.
It doesn't really work in my set, but maybe this would work.
Yeah, that happens.
You.
Okay. That happens. Yeah. When you and I worked with Danny Bonaducci at The Loop, Danny was still doing stand up, and Danny said to me one time, Are there joke writers in town? And I go, yeah, there's a bunch of them.
Because I need them. Big
bad. So there were two different nights that I got five guys together at my apartment, and we wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote, and he didn't take it. He'd go through it. No, I wouldn't say that. That's not me. I wouldn't say that. You know.
So who used all that stuff that was wasted then? Did somebody use
Wanda
it?
Wanda Sykes.
Comedian recycle bin straight to it.
She took all of it, every bit of it. All right, so Robin Williams is number 12. 11, Jerry Seinfeld.
Pretty funny.
He's one of the best.
I mean, really
funny. You can't
argue.
There's no... Who in their right mind could see Jerry Seinfeld and go, I don't see it.
But he wasn't the funniest one on his show, I'll tell you that.
By design.
I know, but I mean, his stand-up, super funny. I mean,
so good.
And you know why? Just so relatable.
He's the king of observational stand-up.
I like it.
He's the best that's ever been. No one in the world can, like, if everybody walked by the exact same chair, you would just go, yeah, I saw the chair. Mm-hmm. But he would have a thing about the chair that you'd go, how did I not see that about the chair?
I'll never forget the one thing he's done is about sports and laundry. And he says, basically, you're just rooting for laundry.
Right.
You know, if the guy's on your team, you're rooting for him. If he gets traded to another team, same guy, different laundry, you hate his guts.
Beautiful.
You know, I mean, that's how it is.
So good. Yeah. All right, so he is ranked number 11th on the list of the greatest stand-ups of all time. So now we get to the top 10. Number 10, Eddie Murphy. Uh-oh. I can tell.
Listen, Eddie Murphy's stand-up was fantastic.
Yes, it was.
Energetic, dirty, funny as hell.
Yes.
What he is now and what he's turned into puts a damper on my feelings of all time.
Was he the Gale Sayers of comedians? You know, had that short burst of like 6 years there, and then everything else just kind of...
That's a great analogy, yeah. Yeah.
But Gale Sayers in hot, tight red leather.
Oh, yeah.
I liked his little...
From the Raw.
Yeah,
the
Delirious,
Raw
maybe.
Delirious, yeah.
Big fan. He was super funny.
He was super funny, both on Saturday Night Live, and this isn't for SNL, this is obviously for his stand-up. Some of it now... But I guess you could say that about almost.
He dropped your ice cream.
Right.
I mean,
so funny.
This is memorable stuff.
Yeah, it's
really
so
funny.
Some of it now, when you watch it, is very homophobic. I mean, again, you can say that about any comic who was working 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. When you watch it now, you go, he probably couldn't say that anymore. I know he couldn't say that anymore. There's a bunch of stuff in that for Eddie Murphy.
Okay,
but,
Don Rickles' lover.
I know.
You're criticizing other
everything
people.
Don Rickles said you couldn't say now. So Eddie Murphy's
but he
number
did.
10. Number 9, boy, is this deserved, Johnny Carson.
Johnny Carson was pretty damn funny.
So funny.
Now, and, I didn't see his much of his stand-up. Are we counting, like, monologues? Well, or?
Yeah, he would do... I mean, obviously, he was the Tonight Show forever, but then he would still go and do several dates in Las Vegas
every year.
Yeah.
I didn't
even
know that.
Like, during his whole reign as host of the Tonight Show, he'd still fly to Las Vegas and do nights in Las Vegas and stuff. Johnny Carson at his best was when he was at his worst. Whenever he did a joke that didn't work, and he would just give that look to the audience, and then the band would play T for Two, and he would tap dance. What's better than that? I so respect him.
I have some Johnny Carson. Do you think he swears in 1964?
Yes.
Uh-oh. Well, should we try it or no?
Let's see.
It's on the stream.
Is it from if it's from TV, you're okay.
Hang on, I got to skip an ad. I'm nervous now. Really? Well, he swore in 64?
He may have. It's possible.
Oh,
I don't think they swore then, did they? They didn't know bad words then. 1964?
Yeah. There was some swearing in 1964.
Oh, there was? Oh, okay.
65 is the year that swearing became a thing. Yeah. But 64,
okay.
Yeah, some guy, Lenny Bruce, was figuring out how to swear. Yeah.
All right, the commercial's almost over here. Let's see what we got.
All right.
Big bands.
Yep.
Introduce.
I always traveled with a big band, too, Ryan. Tommy Dorsey and his orchestra, wherever I worked.
He's just standing there.
Wow.
Looking at the audience, looking up, shielding his eyes, like looking up.
And I don't have one commercial.
That got applause.
Oh my God, how? I just want to hear a little something.
Sure.
This was 1964.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You know, there are several things going on tonight with this show for Halfway House, Dismas House. Not only are they doing this show here, but they are televising the show and sending it to several cities around the country for closed circuit in Chicago and New York, to mention two of them. And on top of that, along with the show, CBS is also filming a special of the career of Frank Sinatra. And they've been following Frank around all day. And that will go on in the fall under the title Crusader Rabbit.
A popular cartoon at the time.
Okay, I don't get any of this.
I'm sure what that meant either. The best thing about him is he had so many weird, odd, nervous tics.
Totally, but it worked to his benefit.
It worked for him. But he was always, you know, straightening his cufflinks or his... the
nervous energy.
Yeah. And,
twitchy.
Always, always, always love him. Number 8 is Steve Martin.
Just love him.
Yeah. Yep. Great stand-up. The most interesting thing about Steve Martin to me is when I read his autobiography, he talks about that because he was the first comedian slash rock star. He was the first guy that sold out arenas that would only be used for music normally.
He was?
Yeah. Huh. And had that kind of rock star persona. No other stand-up ever did that before him. And during that period, mid-70s, he says he was miserable.
Hmm. That's heartbreaking to hear that.
It's horrible. But he said he felt so alone that his problems couldn't really be shared with anybody. Nobody knew what the pressures of that was like. And I understand that. But I always thought, boy, who's the best person on the planet right now? Who's having a better time than anybody? Steve Martin, no, says he was miserable.
Hmm. That's too bad.
Dave Chappelle is number 7.
He grew on me. I didn't like him at first. I don't know why. Because he was raw. I don't know. It took me a while to warm up to him.
He's immensely talented. I would never put him at number 7 on the list of all-time greatest stand-up comics. Put him at top 50, maybe. But 7 is a little high.
He makes an appearance in A Star Is Born, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
he's Bradley Cooper's friend in that.
Like, groundbreaking and...
Seven?
No, Robin Williams should be up there.
Oh, Jerry Seinfeld, Robin Williams.
Yeah, because Robin wasn't in the top 10, I don't believe.
I think he was number... Was he number 10?
Oh, okay, because he should have been. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Number 6, I know you'll agree with this one, Joan Rivers.
Loved her.
Yeah, very talented. Number 5, Louis C.K. Asterisk.
All right. Louis grew on me, too. I didn't really know who or what he was. I really didn't. I'm not into the comedy scene that much. I saw him host SNL. He won me over. I liked him. I don't like him anymore.
Mm-hmm. Because of recent...
Well, yeah. And I just think he's a pig, and I think he could have... It's weird that he didn't bring it up. You mentioned this before, that he did like a pop-up surprise show.
Several of them now.
And has not just come out and just...
It's disappointing, isn't it?
Yeah.
He should have handled it better, ironically.
Steve, why are you not doing stand-up? Yeah. Write him that, send him that joke.
Straight to Wanda Sykes.
The top four, so we're on number four right now. I would have guaranteed I knew who the top four were, and I'm only wrong on one. I would have thought, again, recent developments have changed things a little bit, but you would almost assume that Bill Cosby would have to be in the top three or four.
Yeah.
He did not make this list. So even though somebody said, I forgive you, Louis C.K., I forgive you, Aziz Ansari, I forgive you, whoever, Bill Cosby was not forgiven, so he's not on this list, surprisingly. Number four, of course, Lenny Bruce, of course.
Yeah.
Innovator.
And I probably missed a lot of his stand-up. You were doing it, so you would watch, and plus you were a weird little kid. Well, you watched some things.
Weird kid?
We had his albums that I would listen to. My parents' first date was to see Lenny Bruce.
Okay.
My dad had seen him a couple of times before. My mom had never seen him, and that's where they went on their first date, to see Lenny Bruce here in town. And
most kids did not hear, and I mean, I didn't know about him until I was older, and I missed the Lenny Bruce thing.
You know, sadly, much of what is put out there about Lenny Bruce was him in the last stage of his career, when he wasn't really doing stand-up anymore so much as pulling out newspapers and talking about him getting arrested.
Rabble-rousing. That's what he was doing more.
If you want to really see him in his prime, get the earlier stuff when he was more up and coming and wasn't doing the whole show based on the fact that he's not allowed to do a show. Because, I don't know. I know that that was an important period because he was saying we should all have freedom of speech, but it wasn't so much funny anymore.
Yeah.
And
that's of a mission.
Kinda, yeah. Number three is Chris Rock.
He's really funny.
Third best of all
three.
Time.
No way.
I'd put him in the top 20. I would not put him in number three.
Agree.
Numbers one and two, I know you'll know. Number two is George Carlin, who I would put at number one, but it's very, very close.
Richard Pryor, of course. They should be tied. I'm serious.
It's
hard to put one over the other.
There's some Carlin blood running through here at WGN, by the way.
George Carlin blood?
Yeah.
Who?
Mm-hmm. Jeff Carlin.
No,
he's
they're
not related.
Related.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, no. distant relative.
Is he?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe him.
I think he may have just told you that.
No way!
Yeah, I don't think he is.
Well, now we could be...
No, because I've asked him.
You've asked Jeff?
Yeah.
Oh, so he was lying to me, but
I'll
not to you?
Anyone,
is that what you're saying?
Yes.
I never asked him, because I didn't think for a minute they were related.
No, they're not. No. It's a fairly common...
I understand that the
Irish
names are
name.
Same, and they're, but he told
I tell
me.
People I was related to Tom Snyder.
Did
no
you?
One cares or believes me, but, you know. Well, I'm mad at... Did he really tell
he
you?
Told you
he
that?
Did tell me that, yeah.
Did you bring it up? Did you say, hey, any relation? And he goes...
No, it was a conversation we were having when he died, I think. How many years ago did he die? Maybe this was after. This was well after, maybe. I
got to find out.
That was
now
always my understanding.
Yeah. I got to know.
I don't think they're related. I'm almost positive.
Nah.
Why? It's so funny he would lie to you because you're in the news business and I'm just a circus clown.
There are a lot of people listening right now going, see, the news is always
it's
wrong.
Always
they're
great.
Always
because
wrong.
You're being a former stand-up, he would think you would know. Like you could
maybe.
Research it or do something.
Oh, okay.
You know, we got to get out of here because there's a podcast that's recording after us.
All right, Ryan, thanks
Thank
for hanging
you
out. We'll close things off next.
Say hi to George Carlin's cousin.
Please.
Twice removed. Never been there. All right, Bill, we did it. It's Tuesday, two for Tuesday, so we're going to do another hour.
I'm up for that.
We'll do another hour tomorrow.
We'll do an hour tomorrow. No mention of Manny Machado tomorrow, please.
All right.
It's too soon. It's just too soon. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hope you enjoyed yourselves. Tomorrow, the middle of the week already. Seems like we just started yesterday, and tomorrow's already the middle of the week. I don't know how they do it. Bye, Wendy.
See you, Bill.